Hi, everyone, and welcome to Futures in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we'll be talking with Niko Kostakis, who graduated from the MA TESOL program in spring of 2021. Thank you so much for joining us today, Niko.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's so nice to catch up with you. I know that we've crossed paths a number of times in the department, and we've worked really in offices next to each other for a bit of time during your time in the MA TESOL. So I know that you've been up to a lot of things since your graduation in spring of 2021. But let's go ahead and start off with a general question. Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, maybe where you're from?
Certainly. I am from originally Newport Richey, Clearwater area of Florida. And I am the youngest of three brothers. I am Greek American. My mom is first generation, but my dad came here when he was about 15 or so. And I went to UCF not only for my master's, for my undergrad. My brother also went there too, my eldest. He went for mechanical. My other brother went to USF for civil. And then actually I went for industrial engineering. So I know I'm skipping a lot, but I actually was a pretty good engineer and everything. I am actually now in faith, a Christian faith. I used to be agnostic. But all that to say is before I had gone into Peace Corps, I had gone to church and I got this calling saying, Niko, you need to be doing something greater than yourself. So I was like, all right, let's do it. So I looked into Peace Corps. I heard about Peace Corps briefly from my sister-in-law, and I went in, I think it was July of 2016. I ended up teaching physics in my very rural village at a secondary school, and I came back, and then as I was doing that, God was just reorienting me with, you know, volunteering more and caring more about, like, language and diversity, cultures, etc. So I just got more involved in the community in Orlando. And yeah, just started the master's.
And here we are. And for our listeners, if you don't mind me interrupting, where did you do your Peace Corps service?
So I did my Peace Corps service in a very rural village in Mbeya, the region, Tanzania. Mm. It's Southeast Africa, near Kenya and Mozambique. You have Uganda, Rwanda. And trust me, in Peace Corps, your cultural competence goes sky high. It's not like a checkmark box. It's like, yeah, I'm done. No, it's a continuous thing. Mm-hmm. But I definitely miss it. I miss the people. I miss the culture. It's not meant for everybody, but I definitely recommend it for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear you talking a lot about this vocation to do service to your community and really about social justice issues too. How did you find the MA TESOL program after the Peace Corps?
Yeah, so I actually still volunteer here and there with the Adult Literacy League. Mm. It's based in Orlando, but the executive director of that actually served in Peace Corps, Gina. Little did I know, but I didn't realize that after the fact of volunteering, building up my reputation there, one-on-one tutoring with like one, two Puerto Rican gentlemen, and then started to do like workshops and built my reputation, then got subcontracted to teach at Synchrony Bank. So doing all of that, it inspired me to get more involved, to think, okay, what is on campus? Because I was the Peace Corps recruiter at UCF, mm-hmm, a year and a half. So I reached out, being in the UCF Global Building, I noticed that they had the English language learners there and they had conversational hours. So I would attend there. And then I also was coordinating with Dr. Mihai, Dr. Kaminsky, just many, many people to come and present, as well as, you know, in your class, and just connecting, networking. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Dr. Farina. Mm. So she, you know, I had asked her, and she had offered for me to get more involved with paper revisions of looking at, you know, side-by-side papers. Also, the conversational hour, like I mentioned before, I'm not sure if they still have it.
They do.
Mm-hmm. We've actually started that here. So just getting inspired and bringing that over here too. But yeah, that's how I got involved in Master and TESOL, mm-hmm, really, because Ms. Jefferson and meeting with Dr. Kaminsky, it was like, I think a week or two before the cutoff of like getting or becoming a graduate teaching assistant mm-hmm. for that application, as well as to start in the fall. I got in. I became a graduate teaching assistant under Amy Schoonmaker. Dr. Schoonmaker's supervision. Mm-hmm. Amazing person. And yeah, I just jumped right into the MA.
And here we are, you know, flash forward several years later. One of the things that we talk about on this podcast with a lot of the guests is just about the different windy, twisty turns that life throws at us and how we find ourselves in certain situations. And here we are, and it all makes sense in retrospect. And yet mm-hmm. folks who are thinking about their next career moves might feel a little bit daunted by the next choice. And do you have anything to say to the folks who are just maybe starting out who might feel like, oh gosh, like big decisions coming up on the horizon?
Yeah, I definitely can say that two things assisted me. Well, person, I guess. One, God and all that, like I mentioned before. Just even not being in faith just yet and realizing that after the fact that he had his hand on that and still does that plan throughout. And two, like I mentioned before, like serving in Peace Corps, the first thing you learn in Peace Corps is letting go of your personal expectations. Mm-hmm. I know that's difficult to do even now, like coming back many years later, but still just working with people from different cultures, communities, and backgrounds all across the board. You know, you're more marketable for sure. That's not the reason, the sole reason, if anything, to go into Peace Corps. But I did receive my master's because for free in a sense, and I was paid. I developed that, those skills as well as the networks and benefits all that too, because Peace Corps partners up with universities nationwide. So they kind of look at that and say, wow, you know, you have those skills, soft skills and hard skills mm-hmm. experience. So doing Peace Corps, like you may feel nervous, like in the, like you maybe haven't graduated yet. So you can still apply for that and get it approved, hopefully going into it. And coming back, you realize, like, going in it and being in it is, like I mentioned, very difficult. And coming back is even more. You know, you may have that reverse culture shock.
Sure.
Just doing, putting yourself in those positions, getting out of your comfort zones, it's difficult, yeah. And, you know, it is, as we have the expression, you know, like, taking a leap of faith, it's definitely worth it, you know. Risk.
I would imagine that it really just helps grow your empathy.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I always define to my students, you know, do you know the difference between sympathy and empathy? And of course, apathy. And it really is like, yeah, in some regards, you can't empathize and that's okay. But doing things like that, mm-hmm. you know, placing yourself, either forcing yourself or somebody else or whatever happens to you in life, it definitely increases, you know, your compassion and sure. empathy, like you said.
Yeah. Sometimes I talk with my students in office hours and we talk about growth and learning and how growth and learning really occur often as a result of tension, you know, and tension is not comfortable because we have to accommodate for new information that's being processed, right? So I hear you describing some of that growth process through your experiences learning and teaching and working abroad. So thank you for sharing those with our listeners.
Yeah. The other day I heard somebody say, yeah, how diamonds are made and diamonds are put under pressure. And I said that to my students. I'm like, I'm making you all into diamonds. And because I've gotten so much feedback back again, learning from you, learning from Dr. Schoonmaker, learning from Dr. Farina, the list goes on, you know, and I've learned that discipline is, you know, has a negative connotation, but discipline in the classroom, in this regard, the way I use it, it's like a personal trainer, right? As an educator, we put on different hats.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, it's, you know, even more difficult, I would say, because maybe pride or, you know, responsibilities, whatever else, priorities do get are on the list there. So having that somebody to encourage you, not to take that feedback and like get discouraged, but to encourage and say, mm-hmm. you can do this, you know, and this firm manner that I'm approaching this with is for your benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And also in the context of that, sharing the why, you know, as you're saying, like explaining why it is that you're receiving feedback and why it is that we're doing things a certain way. Explaining that, I think, helps to get more buy-in too. You know, we're doing this together as a class, community, all of us. I'm definitely sharing what I know, but you're also sharing what you know. And together, you know, we are meeting each other halfway. So all very great things for our listeners to hear. So thank you, Nico. I know you've been up to a lot of things since graduation. Among them, you worked as a virtual English language fellow. And you can't see this, listeners, but I often do this with my ears, the Spock ears for the elves, because that's what we are. And I say we because I was also an English language fellow back in the 2014-15 cycle. But you did a virtual one with a university in Istanbul, Turkey. Is that correct?
Correct.
Would you like to share with our listeners a bit more about that?
Sure. I taught at Marmara University, based in Istanbul. Little did I know, my Turkish friends actually met at working at an English institute in Florida, in Orlando, USAIDA, and they're currently, now I said, friends. They said, oh, Marmara University, that's a well-renowned school. I was like, oh, okay, did not know that. So I had the opportunity, extended the opportunity towards the end of my 1 year to go face-to-face, but then now securing this job here in Arlington, Texas, I decided to pursue that. But I did continue, you know, teaching, I think, at one or two places virtually. You know, one was online, USAIDA. I worked there for 2.5 years or so. And then one in Tampa that was face-to-face. But I was also, I just started my VELF online, the virtual, we call it VELF. With Marmara University. So because of the time difference, like 8 or so hours with daylight savings, I would wake up at like 5 a.m. Yeah, I would like go to sleep. I don't know. I usually don't need that much sleep, but 5 a.m. or so on Thursdays, and then like 1 a.m. on Fridays. Oof. And I continued that for the 1 year and even until I got here to Texas too.
Ooh. Yeah.
So, and then that's for the 3 or 4 months or so last spring, I was doing that while working the 40 hours. So my Thursday and Fridays, you better believe I was pretty tired.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like you were really motivated to work with your groups too. Could you share a little bit about maybe the classes that you taught for the university in Turkey?
Yeah, solely I was selected for working on their speaking and listening skills. So with the VELF, I was limited to 10 hours per week. So I would split it up, and then we did 4 sections of a speaking listening class. That way I didn't have to, you know, redo all my lessons. I could just repurpose them across those 4. And they were about, I would say, intermediate low to high. And I still, to this day, get emails. Again, that was a year ago. I still, to this day, get emails from those students, just like the appreciation and, you know, coordinating with some to, they're coming over here to like New Jersey, and one's going to Harvard and like different universities, and say, oh, teacher, can you, you know, meet up with us and everything. So it really is amazing just to still have those connections.
Yeah. And that's really one of the major reasons why we do this too, right? We're here working with people because we care about their success and because we want to help them to reach their personal goals. So how wonderful that you're able to retain communication with your former students. I always get really excited whenever I see emails. This past week, I just saw one of my former students got accepted to a master's program, and another student just got accepted into the JET program to teach in Japan. So again, I tell them I'm celebrating with you. Here we are together. Yeah, that's what it's about. So in your speaking listening classes, for those who might not be as familiar with TESOL and speaking listening pedagogy, could you maybe share like 1 or 2 things that you helped your students with in the course of those courses?
Yeah, I would definitely give it all to Dr. Farina.
Mm-hmm.
She had taught me so much, and observing her, and that's one thing I would definitely recommend for everybody, is take notes, observe, just don't even speak, just take notes and absorb it all, you know, professionals, honestly. So definitely using her skills, I can't capture all of them for sure, but using some of her skills towards those speaking and listening sections, they definitely improve their confidence. Like I said, we put on different hats. So just seeing the growth, and they may not see it, but you see it as an instructor, and seeing their soft, like the confidence, the comfort, and, you know, at first they're a little timid and scared too, you know, maybe because of past experiences or culture, family, whatever they're bringing to the table, you may not know about. So seeing them develop, like you said, like growing overall, not just their language skills. But with that, though, with that confidence and everything, whether it's the pronunciation or their fluency, you know, and like eliciting, as Dr. Freena, I learned from her, right? Like, don't interrupt by, you know, with verbal, like do gestures. So, and that was virtual again. So having their cameras on and everything too, was such a blessing to have, you know, with the distance learning, and you could be all across the globe and you're still teaching, you know? So yeah, those are a couple things that I've noticed about my students and the difference.
So the ability to work with camera is great. Did you have, what size groups did you have for your virtual classes?
We would cap it at like the first, I think it was 15 or so to register, 15 to 20. So I would have, you know, as few as, let's say, three or four students in like the Friday, like last section. Because of Friday, you know, and the time difference too. It was kind of like toward near evening time versus like maybe 16 students on the Thursday or so.
So not 30 or 40 on Zoom. So definitely manageable. So I understand that you are now teaching at Tarrant County College in Arlington, Texas. Could you share with our listeners a bit about your job there and what it is that you do with your students now?
My title is instructor slash counselor. I'm staff, if you want to differentiate between faculty and staff, because I hope to become faculty. That's the goal. I currently teach, we have two different programs here, and going into it, I was like, that's a lot weird, because we have, we throw a lot of acronyms, initialism around, in TESOL, for example. So like here they have ESL and ESOL, these two programs. ESL is mainly for students who are trying to improve their day-to-day English, workforce English, whereas ESOL, because this is a community college. And it occurred to me actually 2 weeks ago, a coworker said, like, if they don't make it here at the community college level, they don't make it at all. They don't move on to university. And I'm just like, wow, that's like so true. And at community college, you have to understand it's a different student background. We have dual enrollment or dual credit. And we have undocumented asylees, refugees, F1 visa, F2 visa, J1, like learning a lot. So them coming to the table, they may just want to improve for their academic English, and they want more intense classes. So that's the ESOL. So we have ESL and ESOL. After they pass our ESOL classes, we have the four different skills, like oral communication, grammar, writing, and reading. After they pass reading and writing, level three, the grammar and oral communication are like supplemental, like booster courses in a sense. We have three each for each, so we have 12 classes together. After they pass writing three and reading three, they go on to the other college courses. So they can take any other college course. Is what we call TSI-MET. It's a standardized test that Texans or you have to take here in Texas, like ACT, SAT, but I would say not as difficult, but that's, again, perspective. So yeah, we have those two, but as far as the demographics go, all across the board, especially at the community college. I guess listed off like what they're, you know, maybe coming in with. They may just be, again, a U.S. citizen. We have, I just registered two Puerto Rican ladies yesterday in ESL program.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing those different levels. Do I understand correctly that the students, after they finish the ESOL courses, might take a test and after that test then get accepted? Or is it a bridge straight from the ESOL into the community college?
So, and going back to the first question too, I both do that with the admin, but I also teach. Helping with the onboarding with the tests, we'd use the Michigan placement test, the MEPT. So proctoring that, the turnaround for the MEPT is immediate. Like, we read their scores and we place them as accurately as we can, regardless if it's for ESL or for ESOL. They still have to take the test, and it's free to them. So based on that score, we place them either into ESL. We have six levels, basic to level five, mm-hmm. or ESOL. Again, depending on what they're looking for.
Yeah, it sounds like your ESOL program is more the academic purposes track that folks would take to then go into the university. So they complete your program, they go into the university, and then we see, you know, their trajectories after that. Could you share with our listeners who might be curious? I know it's difficult to say anything is typical in teaching, but could you maybe run them through, like, what a day in the life of what you do at your job could be like?
Yeah, helping them onboard, like, going with them and using your teacher talk in a sense of choosing your words wisely and just a whole lot of things. And because you don't know what level they are coming in, they may come with somebody, they may not. Again, you may have people who are old-time employees and doing this after hours. So we're open until 6. So being available, making it accessible, especially for community members who can just come in. So once we onboard them, you know, taking that test, seeing them, placing them, and then registering them, walking them, though, literally walking with them, like office to office, to registrar admissions, to bookstore. It, fortunately, it's not too far to walk at this community college. Mm-hmm. And thereafter, I put on different hats, so I do teach as well. I always tell my supervisor, I always say, put me in, coach, put me in. Like, pronunciation course is my baby, you know, again, from Dr. Farina. Like, I'm like, oh, man, I love it. But I do now, I teach both the reading 2, the writing 2, and the reading 3 and the writing 3. Okay. So, and then simultaneously, though, we have adjuncts, you know, staff or faculty teaching the ESL and other ESOL classes. I don't teach only the ESOL. There are other instructors as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd imagine there's multiple sections going on at the same time to serve the entire population here at your college. So it's cool that you get to wear both hats. You get to teach and you get to work on the admin side too. That's an experience that not everybody can have at the same time. So
putting out fires on the admin side is, you like you said earlier, like empathy. You can empathize more. It's like, oh, wow, you all do a lot.
Yeah.
Because we see, as an educator, you're like, I'm just going to go. I'm going to teach lesson plan, grade, et cetera, you know. Mm-hmm. But on the admin side, you're like, okay, a lot of things go into this, you know, for this machine to keep working. So I give it to Dr. Perminsky and the different hats that she puts on, for sure.
So many, for sure. So I don't know if this is true for you too, but I think the pandemic really just highlighted more than ever the understanding that, yes, we teach, and yes, we maintain routines in our class, and yes, we have policy, but at the end of the day, we're all people, and we're all people supporting each other. And again, that has really, I think, shifted the attitudes, at least in my experience, with maybe my classroom communities. I don't know if you've felt the same on your side, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I did. During the pandemic, still, of course, COVID is still around, but not as severe in some areas. But in Orlando, at least, like, teaching remotely, you know, with my students, especially at USADA, you, like you said, it was more intentional, and you get to know them more because you can see their household.
Or you see the cat being raised in front of the camera, like, here it is. Yeah.
You know, like, being more flexible in the times that you can meet too, where, you know, things were opening back up, like, just connecting more, you know. But being in the classroom, and they knew, like, because these are my students that I had face-to-face, and then pandemic, you know, virtual and all that. And then it was just amazing, the relationships, like we were saying before, the students, the relationships. That's, again, going back to Peace Corps, is the relationships, the biggest thing, from my perspective, hands down.
For sure, for sure.
So, and then translating that here, again, the people, understanding where they're coming from, and, you know, empathizing where appropriately, sympathizing, of course, all the time. It truly is amazing to see, you know, their growth and your growth too. You don't realize it, but yeah.
We learn a lot from our students, I say. To all my pre-service teachers, we learn a lot from our students too. So very cool what you're up to now. I have my next question here, and you've touched a little bit on this before, but could you elaborate more on maybe how the MATSOL program prepared you for your life now?
How has it prepared me? Well, let's just say that now, having all of you, it's difficult to turn my teacher brain off. So whether I'm learning a different language right now, Portuguese, I don't know if that's the way I would teach that class, you know, or whether it's like worshiping in church on Sundays and say, there should be a comma there. Like, oh my gosh, what's going on? It definitely has prepared me to, first off, the professionalism. Seeing how, again, being partnered up with Dr. Schoonmaker, seeing how she conducts herself, but also in the class, and just being punctual and everything too, learning from her, learning from many others, like I mentioned before. And it just really is amazing how all of that comes together when you have your own classroom, or in the case of administration too. So it's helped me professionally. Just education in general too. I'm a big advocate for it. Now I'm in the EDD program, wanting to switch to a different one, the PhD. That could be a different question, but just valuing education more so, that the program has helped me with that. And I hinted at this before, your cultural competence, like, it gets raised exponentially. Like, we mentioned before, like, you're more empathetic, sympathetic to people. It doesn't even have to be in the education sector. Mm-hmm. You know, it's outside the classroom is really where it's applicable. Mm-hmm. You develop a lot of these soft skills and just patience. As an educator, you have to be very, very patient. And, oh man, there's so many soft skills. Your communication skills, like the way that I speak now, the way I conduct myself now is not the same.
Do you have any standout stories from classes that you took during the MAT Sol that you feel like you would like to share with our listeners?
I guess it's biased, but it's got to be like my first one. Again, Dr. Farina taught it, but the grammar class, and using Dr. Fulce's book. His book is...
It's excellent. Yeah. And for our listeners who might not know, that is the Red Keys book, Grammar Teaching for English Language Teaching Professionals. It's one of those gold standard books, and we use it in the undergrad TEFL certificate too. But go ahead, I got excited.
That's okay. No, I get excited for it too. And the second one, I was just thinking, because, I mean, Dr. Mihai, the way he taught too, the research methods, that's good, but you're putting me on the spot here. I was going to say Dr. Perminsky's assessment course. Mm-hmm. The reason I pursued or started to pursue an EDD here at Texas A&M was because of her great example. But yeah, I would say definitely those two, and gosh, another one just came to mind too. Dr. Vitanova's, her linguistics course, Applied Linguistics. Oh my gosh, such a good course. Mm-hmm. It really, really that course is really good for all language skills. And if you're teaching different, like I said, like the listening, the pronunciation, speaking, grammar, vocab, whatever it is, it will definitely assist you in assisting your students.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing that, Nico. We do have a new segment in the podcast called Ask Our Alumni. So today we have a question from Cassidy. And are you ready, Nico?
I am ready.
Okay, here we go.
Do you have any specific research interests that you're passionate about? And what got you interested in this research?
Good question, Cassidy. Good question. A lot of things interest me, but one thing particularly that I think actually in Dr. Perminsky's course presented on it a little bit, and I did present virtually at the conference here in North Texas, linguicism. So, and even Dr. Perminsky at the time too said there was a low-hanging fruit in there. It's what it is linguistic discrimination. Oh. Just seeing how, again, there isn't too much research on it, but being more the opposite is being more inclusive, whether it's in our assessments or our pedagogical skills, and even on the administrative side of the documents, the forms, right? Are we using inclusive language? Are we excluding people, whether it's, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to admit that they're being discriminatory. Mm-hmm. At the same time, learning from Dr. Farina, auditory discrimination worksheets, discrimination has a negative connotation in English, but what does discrimination mean, right? To differentiate,
mm-hmm.
you know, to separate. So listening, right? So as instructors, not being hurtful or harmful with our discriminatory practices in the classroom or in the forms, documents, etc., but being more inclusive in our those materials, the assessments, how we conduct ourselves. Like I said before, not to discourage, not with the intent, not consciously with the intent of saying, I'm going to do harm and being vindictive or something like that,
mm-hmm.
but being intentional with it to be, you know, to encourage. So whether it's UCF or TCC, Tarrant County College, you know, the websites that we publish, like upper right corner, right hand, wherever, like the flags or the languages, right? Arabic, Farsi, you know, Dari, French. It's difficult to include all the languages, and because this is where it becomes, you know, a fine line. Which language are you going to include? And who's on the receiving end of those documents? Are they able to interpret what, you know? Mm-hmm. So linguicism is for sure on mine to keep observing and researching that, as well as orthography. I learned mm-hmm. from Dr. Freyna on this too. I still have to look into it more, but how our reading fluency, especially as we see orthographically, like the characters jumping out at us, is seeing how that helps us with our speaking fluency, looking at something or not. So I don't know, again, if there's something already there, you know, then I'm sure there is.
Yeah, but all that sounds really cool. And it sounds like you're touching also on some sociolinguistics in your your research on language choice in public. Yeah. So all of that is very relevant, very cool. I have one last question for you today, Nico, and that is, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in studying TESOL?
I would definitely get involved at the community level, serving. One thing I'm a big advocate, even in my interview and hopefully transitioning to this PhD, is that it's not about me. It's about what you, I would definitely, whoever you are, get involved at the community level. Again, Dr. Farina and Dr. Vanova, many others, like, they encourage you to get into service learning
mm-hmm.
before you graduate and even before you get into the degree. Now, at the same time, I would say, and going back to the other question, is what has prepared me for? I wish I would have gone to the MA TESOL program or TEFL certificate, whatever. Honestly, TESOL certificate or MA, but definitely getting into that before you, and that's why I mentioned about the whole taking notes and observing
mm-hmm.
before you get into that teacher role.
Yeah.
You know, because it's intimidating, especially when somebody asks you something you don't know. It's like, as I learned, is it's okay to say, I'm not sure. Let me get back to you on that.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to just run our mouths on things, for sure.
And actually getting back to them on that.
Yeah.
So you learn so many things from the professionals. So those are two things, like service learning, you know, going hand in hand with somebody and just observing. And that's the second thing, like service learning, but observation.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's okay to audio record somebody and getting their permission or consent, or video, you know, some instructors do that, or actively taking notes. And that's what I did with Dr. Schoonmaker. I just, for the whole, I don't know, several months, my first term, I was just taking notes. I was taking notes going, and she told me the other day that I didn't have to go every Thursday, but I did because mm-hmm. I wanted to be the best for my students, you know, not the best. It was, we were using superlatives, but being better for my students.
Yeah, we always want to be our best possible selves for our students. And the best way to do that, as you've shared, is to continue to grow, because really to be a teacher just means to be a lifelong learner. It's just as you're saying, it's something I say a lot, like teaching is it's a privileged position. Like, not everybody has the opportunity to teach. And when we have that responsibility, we want to fulfill it to the best of our abilities for the service of our communities, so that we can encourage them, yeah, to be their best possible selves too. That's why we're all in it together. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
Especially in different cultures.
Oh, yeah.
The title of teacher, the status of teacher is sought out in other cultures. I mean, I don't think education is as valued here as far as like the teacher goes or public school system, etc., as other countries. Like in Tanzania, for example, like whether it's being a male and expected to wear long, you know, slacks and button up, you know, even though it's brutally hot in my village, right? But having the status of teacher, even though you have this expression in Swahili of you say somebody who is usually an elder, like older than you, shikamo. But I would have students in like form six who were older than me at the time, but they would still say shikamo, which is like I respect you. And then you say marahaba back. And it's like, wait a minute. Kwa nini unasema shikamo? Like, why are you saying shikamo? I'm old, I'm younger than you. You know, it's like, it's not, it's the respect thing.
Sure.
Like you said, like, having the privilege, the opportunity to even continue your education and surrounding yourself with people who are very, you know, knowledgeable in that area, like, do it. You know, education is golden. You know, no one can take, as my mom was one of three, the eldest of three immigrant parents, like, my grandma, my yaya would say to her, like, education they can't take away from you.
Sure. I can agree with you there, Nico. And thank you again for sharing to our listeners the difference between being trained as an English language teacher and just being a native speaker, because we know that there are some jobs around the world that will just take someone who speaks English, that there is a difference between being trained as a teacher to teach in a language versus just being a native or fluent speaker of that language. For our listeners, for our folks who are interested in teaching English abroad, our recommendation is that you please get your credentials wherever it is that you do, but please get your credentials before you head off.
For sure. Yes. Please, please, please.
Yeah. Is there any final thought that you'd like to end today's episode with, Nico?
I would just like to personally thank God. You know, thank God that he reorganized my life. It, again, from being in industrial engineering and working manufacturing software to now being a linguist and grammarian, you know, it's totally different. And many other things have changed, you know, for the better. And I'm just so thankful. And secondly, thank you, Christina. Thank you, you know, for Dr. Schoonmaker and many. I'm so thankful for God, for you all, for all the instructors, all the, you know, professors at UCF and, again, in the community, too, that opened the doors, you know, to me, willingly to come into the classroom, to assist, to observe, whatever it is. It really has made me the person who I am today, you know, has contributed to that. And it's ongoing. I still get inspiration from all of you. Like I just said earlier, like, this is such a great idea. Like, I want to try students for the testimonies, you know, because we have people from Kyrgyzstan, Azerbaijan, Vietnam. We have many people here from there, you know, El Salvador, Puerto Rico, like all across the globe. So just hearing people's stories, you know, it's great inspiration of what you're doing. So thank God and thank you all too.
Yeah. And thank you so much, Nico, for reminding us that we are a community, like all teachers. We're all a community in our classrooms. We share our communities with each other and we continue to inspire each other. So thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to Davideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Nico Kostakis. Turn in next time to hear more alumni stories from Modern Languages. For more information about the MATSOL and other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.